Continuing discussion of verse 8, Lord Brahma is telling the, this is the get to the end of your rope, tie a knot and hold on verse. Tolerate anything and everything, anywhere and everywhere. Tolerate anything and everything that happens to you and think, well, I deserved it. In fact, I deserve so much more. But Krishna is kind to me. It's like playing baseball. Our karma is like baseball. Our prarabdha karma. And someone's throwing a fastball at us. Super fast. You know, cricket ball or whatever. And we're looking the other way. Excuse me. We're looking out as a way, and that fastball is going to crack us right in the back of the head. It's a very hard, old-fashioned cricket ball. It's not some rubber ball we used to play cricket in the corner parking lot. It's a hard, traditional, rock-hard cricket ball. And it's being thrown at 500 kilometers an hour, or maybe 1,000. Just to really just get the idea. And we're looking the other way, and that's going to go square in our noggin. It's going to hit us in the back of the head and probably kill us. And what that ball represents, the head is, you know, the body is us. And the ball represents our prarabdha karma, our karmic reactions. And the pitcher, the one who's throwing it, it's funny, the catcher and the pitcher are only one man. But the man who's throwing the ball at the back of our head at 1,000 kilometers an hour, and the man who's going to get hit by that ball are one and the same. It's me throwing the ball and it's me going to get cracked. And that crack that will hit, that ball that will hit my head and crack it in two, like that Brichasaura demon that got his head cracked by his own finger, right? He went to crack Shiva's head and Govinda Krishna intervened and convinced him to try it out on himself first. So that Vrikasura ended up cracking his own head, isn't it? That was his own misdeeds. So each one of us is a chota brick. That's funny, because brick means, I don't know, wolf or something. Either means wolf or means tree, kalpavriksha. And brikadara, brikudara was the name for Bhima. Brico, so I don't know the accent, I don't have the word in front of me, but brico, brick odara, odara means belly like Damodara, and brica means wolf. Wolf is like a wild dog, lives in the jungle, and oh! So either it's wolf belly or a tree demon, or wolf demon or something. Anyone, Brichasaura is there in the Dwarka Lila of Krishna book. So he ended up cracking his head and killing himself because of his envy and his bad karma. So we're like chota brikasauras. We're cracking our own head. We can't complain. We can't blame Shiva. We can't blame Krishna. We can't blame the demigods or God or any man or woman. It's our own nefarious, convoluted, sinful karma which unwinds and sends us to Yamaraj ultimately. So we're throwing the cricket ball at 1,000 kilometers and it's our head that's going to land on. And that cricket ball that we're throwing at ourselves is going to kill us. We're killing ourselves. Atmahat. Atmahan. Atmahat. Killers of the self. We are killing ourselves because of our own ignorance. This is like a commentary on 10.14.8. A little analogy type. So now, we're destined, it's called free will and destiny. So we're destined to die by our own misdeeds. We're destined to destroy ourselves by our own misdeeds. However, free will comes into play. Somehow, chota brikasura, us, the little demons, are going to crack our own heads with our own karma and crack our own heads with our own speedball, cricket ball. We meet a devotee, we get initiated, and we become connected with Krishna. So this, we throw this ball at ourselves, and our destiny is going to kill us. But then Krishna says, oh, who's this guy throwing this fastball? this fast ball, this hard, fast cricket ball or baseball hits this guy, he's going to die. But he seems like a nice guy. I think I know him. I have some distant relationship with him. So then what does Krishna do? He reaches up his hand and he catches the ball. And he absorbs all the trajectory, all the velocity, the 1,000 kilometer velocity, and all that trajectory is going to, all the speed of our karma, all the speed and intense velocity, all the speed and intense velocity of our bad karmas or whatever good. Krishna catches it, slows it down, modifies it, then he takes it in his lotus hand and gives it that loving touch. Love, what do they say, loving hands, healing hands. And he walks up behind us with a ball and he just kind of drops it off his hand and he just hits it back overhead, doom, and go, hey, what's that? Basically, the bottom line is that when one surrenders to Krishna, enters his loving, beneficent, and munificent family of Achyuta Gotra, then Krishna intervenes with our destiny. Our free will changes the course of our dastardly destiny. And Krishna saves us from the most horrible and vicious, hellish punishments in this life and the next. This is the vatsalya, the intense motherly affection. The mother will sacrifice her own life to save her son and do whatever she can to relieve his suffering and remove any future suffering, even if she has to suffer. So this is vatsa. Vatsa means calf, and calf has a very special relationship with its mother, vatsa. That intense affection that a mother shows for a calf is called vatsa. And we get this vatsalya. Krishna has the love and care, TLC, tender loving care, attention and affection, even more so. But the closest thing that describes it is the attachment, unswerving and unwavering attachment that a mother cow has for her bacha, her baby. So therefore that's called vatsa. And a baby calf is called vatsa. In Indian culture, at least in Krishna's culture, to when a mother, a very affectionate name for a child is O Vatsa. O Vatsa. And you read throughout Bhagavatam and Vrindavan Leela, Gokul Leela, where Mother shows off and saying, O Vatsa, take your nashta. Come, stop wrestling after milking the cows and come and take your breakfast. Radharani and Rohini have made such wonderful preparations. Please give up your sporting. Oh, vatsa. And it's translated in English, oh my calf, calf-like son, which really doesn't convey the true essence or meaning of this beautiful Sanskrit word vatsa, which further expands to describe Krishna as a baby. He's vatsa, he's calf-like, and because he's receiving so much mother cow-like affection and attention and care, which is incomparable to any other mother of any species, including human beings. Humans, you might say, oh, my tender boy, but it's human motherly affection, although intense and great, it's like a drop in the ocean of a cow's affection. Mother cow's affection far exceeds any human mother, what to speak of, monkey, animal, etc. So this is Krishna. He's Bhakti Vatsali. He's the mother cow for the calf-like devotees. And that same analogy is picked up by Shankaracharya in his Gita Mahatmyam. In the beginning of Gita, there's verses, maybe 8 or 10, 12 verses, that Sripad Shankaracharya, he glorifies and proclaims the glories of the wonderful Gita Upanishad by saying, Arjuna is like a calf. I think you know this. Arjuna is like a calf and Krishna is like a cow. Or the Vedas are like a cow and Krishna is feeding the calf-like Arjuna with the affection and nourishing vatsalya of his beautiful instructions, which are like, they're amrit, they're nectar, and they're sustaining and nourishing. Because milk in Ayurveda, milk is also called amrit. So he's giving his nectarine, this Upadesh Amrit of Bhagavad Gita to his beloved calf-like friend and Shishya Arjuna. So this analogy is given by Sripad Shankaracharya. in his glorification of the immortal teachings of Krishna to his disciple or friend Arjuna. Vishnu Chakravarti writes a very wonderful illumination in this verse, which is indicated in it also in the BBT commentary. Now that Brahma has rejected other processes and accepted bhakti as the means to attain Bhagavan Sri Krishna, because in the previous six verses he talked about yoga and jnana and Gana-avrita, karma-gana-avrita. He's rejected these coverings. That he's saying that these are limited. They cannot. He's the gyan-marg and yog-marg. They really can't take you to the top position. You can understand something about some form of Bhagavan, maybe Paramatma or Brahman. But learned people, learned sages and rishis, they've analyzed the whole tattva of ontology of the absolute truth, and they've come to the conclusion there's three features, and each one is successively higher than the previous one, which was quoted there in the commentaries. Vedanti tat tatvavidas yattaj gyanam advayam. Yattaj gyanam advayam. Advaya gyan. This advaya, non-dual, one absolute one truth, the one truth, advaya. Dwa means two, means not two. Advait, advaya, not two, one. This one indivisible, absolute, unlimited and permanent truth of the reality of the force, the consciousness, the God. Vedanti tat, yet it's divided into three aspects, not one. It's actually the one becomes three. It's simultaneously one, advaya again, and it's simultaneously three features. Bhagavan, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan iti Shavyate. So the lower rung of understanding is, which is very high, is Brahman realization, and above that is Paramatma realization, and the supreme realization is Bhagavan. In the previous prayers of Brahma, as we're saying, and Vishnu Chakravarti is rightly reminding us, he's rejected and saying that Krishna, this is a waste of time, Gyane Priyasam Udupasyanamanta Eva. And the only way to understand this Bhagavan feature, or the topmost feature of the one indivisible Advaya Gyan, absolute truth, is by hearing and chanting about that Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, from advanced bhaktas who have that bhakti in their heart. And they have that conception, their tattva darshan. Tattvagyan. He's saying, understand the truth, and moreover, they've seen that the truth is a person. The greatest Atmaramas Chamuniyo, Atmaramas Chamuniyo, Nigranta. They've gone beyond the Granthas and beyond the Shastras, and they've realized, the greatest Atmaram, self realized yogis, they've realized that the highest feature of the Absolute Truth is a person. The Absolute Truth is personal, personal consciousness with dynamic, transcendental gunas and transcendental form. Divya Rupam and Divya Gunam and Divya Dhamam and Divya Leelam. And it's so sweet. And so the sweetness and the ecstasy and the beauty and charm of that feature of the Absolute Truth far exceeds any experience of Brahmananda or any lower experiences of reciprocation one has by realizing the Brahman or Paramatma feature. So he says, bhakti is a means to realize. And the process of bhakti has been described, which we mentioned, basically hearing and chanting, without much else. You don't have to change your social position, which he said. Hear and chant. And live proper dharma codes of yama and niyama life, human life. Don't live like an animal. Follow the regular principles. Do your varnashram duties. But that's secondary. The main duty is hear and chant about Krishna and always associate with advanced devotees. And you get so attached to the Supreme Personality by the simple process of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam or Krishna Smaranam and Sadhu Sangha and Vaishnav Seva, they give up all attachments to social considerations or ashram considerations and become a pure devotee of the Lord, whether you're a brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, or sannyas. Attain the highest perfection without undergoing the rigorous austerities and difficulties of jnana and tapa that a Mayavadi or Gyani yogi or sannyasi or mystic yogi has to perform. Simple process. Kevala, Ananda, Kanda. Kevala means only. It's only bliss. This is the only. This is a practice of bliss from start to finish. It's not that you eventually attain the bliss. Asan, yama niyama, asan, pranayam, pratyahara, dharana, dhyanam, dhruvana smriti. Then finally bliss. Samadhi means brahmanand, or the bliss of self-realization. That's, you may get it, you may not. But the first day you take Mahaprasadam from Lord Jagannath, you're in bliss. You've only been hearing and chanting about Krishna for 2 days. Someone came from Puri and said, you should go to Jagannath Puri and get this Mahaprasad and see the Rath Yatra. Okay. Some sadhu told me that. I heard it and chanted and I remember it. I did it. Oh, what an experience I had. Seems that the Lord, the Jagannath Krishna, is rolling right into my heart. I just feel that the wheels of his chariot were annihilating, squashing all my karmas and sinful desires. And his beautiful big smile was entering deep into my heart, and his long, beautiful, blackish arms were just wrapping around my back and holding me to his big chest. In fact, upon this, after the Rath, they let me come up and embrace that Lord that I was contemplating on during the Rath Yatra while I was pulling the ropes. So this devotee has a remarkably blissful experience that leaves a very permanent samskara on his brain and on his, let's say, his chitta, his heart, which reverberates for many days and months and years after, creating waves and waves of blissful remembrances. That's Anand. And he's only been 7 days in the movement, or whatever movement, or in the consciousness of Bhagavan consciousness. A devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and committing aparads are special mercy of the Lord. Okay, I'm doing bhakti, but then I'm offending my guru and I'm offending Vaishnavas and Tulsi and animal jiva aparad and nama aparad and seva aparad and dama aparad. Somehow or other, I'm plugging on and rolling on, and bulldozing along the path, bulldozing and stumbling and rolling along the path and wrestling and fighting and kicking down my way down the bhakti marg and incurring a lot of aparads. And I'm getting some good kicks in return and some happiness too. And okay, that's Krishna's mercy because I'm such a rascal. I'm such a rascal, but he still loves me. Bhaktivatsalya Gopal. He still gives me a few kisses and a few kicks. A few kisses and a few kicks and a whole lot of encouragement. This is Krishna's mercy. A few kisses, a few kicks, and a lot of encouragement. If you feel a little discouraged, then go and join the kirtan with some pure devotees. And then you spend 4 or 5 hours and you say, oh, I feel encouraged, oh, Nam Prabhu. You're being nice to me, such a scoundrel that I am, such a wretch that I am, such a low and envious creature that I am. You haven't forgotten me? You haven't kicked me away? Well, everybody else has. I become stinkweed. We're sailing in the ocean of Karma Samudra, or Samsara Samudra, Samsara Sagara, ocean of birth and death. And this boat we have, this material body, is considered to be a boat, and The Nokadara, the captain of the boat, is the Sri Guru. So Prabhupada's books are the captain for all the wayward ships and lost ships lost in the high waves of the sea of Maya. And his books are acting as those solid, stationary, brilliant, beaming beacon lights that are guiding the way to a safe harbor at the lotus feet of Prabhupada and his representatives and any bona fide gurus and ultimately the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna Parasharanam, Guru Parasharanam, Guru Parashraya, Krishna Parashraya, Guru Parashraya, Vaishnava Parashraya, the shelter of the feet of the Vaishnavas, shelter of the feet of the Guru and Krishna. This is the beautiful, ever radiating beacons of bhakti that are present in the form of Prabhupada's books. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srila Prabhupada's transcendental book distribution ki. Vishwanath Chakravarti Pad, he gives such a beautiful analogy because he's such a beautiful person. He says, so the devotees think, wow, Krishna, this is great. You caught that speed ball, that 1,000-kilometer speed cricket ball, baseball is going to crack my head, which was thrown by me and going to be received by me. I'm cracking my own head like Rikasura because of my demoniac karmas and prabdhas. But, alright, the happiness and distress I'm experiencing on the path of devotion, serving Guru and Vaishnavas. And why do I get this distress? It's from committing aparads. Whatever happiness and stress, this is from committing aparads along the way of bhakti, along while passing my days trying to serve Guru and the Vaishnavas. These are all special mercy from the Lord. Here's the analogy. This is like a father who sometimes makes his child drink bitter neem juice. Sometimes the father embraces and kisses his son, and other times he beats him. But still, he's your father, and still he's your loving father. Oh, my dear son, you've been diagnosed with a heavy case of jaundice. Your liver is shot. So the best medicine for you is to drink some bitter neem juice, and that's bitter medicine for a very heavy infection of the liver, bilious condition. So dad, you're a demon. Your father's a demon. Your disease is a demon. And the demon can destroy you if it's not annihilated. I'm your friend. I'm trying to kill a demon that's going to kill you. So then the next day, after the son brings his report card home at the end of the semester, and he's got straight A's and he's a topper in the school, and how much proud his father is and happy he is to receive the good news of his son's academic accomplishment. He sweeps him up in a strong fatherly embrace and kisses him on the forehead and rewards him accordingly. And he feels so happy. My father is so wonderful and kind and loving, and he's really merciful. So a devotee is getting beaten by his bad karma, and all of a sudden, somehow in the midst of all these stumbling, bumbling endeavors at bhakti, he became number one Sankirtan devotee for that year in his temple. So the temple president said, although you are really like Jagai and Madai, you're really a good book distributor, and maybe a lot of devotees in the temple aren't going to appreciate the reward I'm going to give you, but Krishna's inspiring me. And besides, I promised at the beginning of the Sankirtan year that whoever comes in number one gets 3 weeks in Vrindavan, 3 weeks in India. And all expenses paid by the temple, the spending money to buy gifts for your friends and all nice things. And you won, so I'd rather give it to some other better behaved devotees, but I'll keep my honor. So then the devotee said, what is this guy? All year he's offending his godbrothers and now he's walking off with the crown. So that's the mercy. Oh, then he's thinking, oh my God, Krishna, I know I'm a demon. I know I'm an offender and puffed up and proud, but somehow, thanks a lot. He gets on the plane and he's gone. And he's just eating Radhamata's Mahaprasad cakes and bathing the Ganga and swimming back and forth and dancing the kirtans. And there in Mayapur, he's not offending anybody. He's like paying 150 obeisances an hour and going to the yoga pit every time he gets a chance and begging for the mercy of Gaurakishore and Gaurakadadhar and Panchatattva and spending time in Gotrundweep chanting bhajans in front of the samadhi of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakadadhar. And he's really charged up. Then he goes off to Jagannath Puri for a week end of yatra, and he's riding waves for a few hours a day and visiting Siddha Bokul and chanting his 1 lakh of rounds and of course making a little stopover at the Jagannath temple and go to Anand Bazaar. It's called Anand Bazaar, the place where you buy the Mahaprasadam inside the temple. You go up the steps and the lion gate, you can turn right. It's called Anand, as they say in Hindi. Anand, we say Ananda. Ananda Bazaar, it's where you become blissful. And malpo and sweet rice and all the good things you never see outside the gates. You can just buy them and sit down there and eat to your heart's content until your eyes pop out. But this time when your eyes pop out, you're not Keshi and you're not dying on the banks of the Yamuna. You're actually swimming in an ocean of bliss. Shagam Mahaprasadam Ki. So then you go on to Vrindavan for the balance of your 3-week yatra, come holiday, come bog adventure. And then you start kind of zeroing in on some Krishna Balaram Mangalarti sweets and the world famous. And then you get this burfi and rasgullas and squeaky rasgullas and huge sandesh. And you forget about everything. And then, what to speak of buying the noon offering plate every day for 100 rupees. And for 7 days, you're eating the Raj Bhoga for the whole plate. The whole plate is being delivered to your room in the Krishna Balaram guest house. And sometimes you feel guilty about all that. So you go on Vrindavan Prikavan, go take darshan of the 7 temples of Vrindavan and decide that you should do a little something. So every morning you take sunrise snan and Jamuna and do Prikavan. And every other day you go to Giriraj and do Prikavan, take bath in Radhakund. And this way you come back, you're really effulgent. And you get back to your temple. Everyone said, what happened to you? You left here like Hiranyakashipu. And you came back here like, you know, Prahlad Maharaj. So yeah, that's what a Dham Yatra will do. So this is how that sometimes the devotee is beaten by the Lord, which is his own undoing. And sometimes he's blessed by the Lord. Krishna sometimes gives us bitter neem juice because we're really sick. We really need some strong kicks to get rectified and purified of our disease. And sometimes he embraces us to no limit. He showers us as a phrase we often heard, that Krishna, with his 10 arms, if he wants to give you something, he has 10 arms to give you something. So with our 2 arms, we can never accept or hold all the gifts he can shower on us with 10 arms. And if Krishna wants to take something from us, we can't hold on. He has 10 arms to rip out whatever we're cherishing and holding on in our hands or in our heart or our mind, whatever material desires or anarthas or aparads or avidyas that were preventing us from full surrender. He can, with his 10 arms, he can take away more than we can ever hold on. He can take away our house, our estate, our bank account, our family, our body, anything. So this is Krishna. Sometimes Krishna gives us bitter neem juice, and sometimes he gives us a half a bucket of sweet rice that somebody forgot to serve out at the Sunday feast. Or somebody deliberately put it behind the curtains of the deity room, and then you were cleaning the deity room after the Sunday feast. Oh. So sometimes Krishna, like a father, embraces his son, or sometimes he beats his son. What is this? You spit on your grandfather. Your grandfather, can you see? He held you on his lap, and then he was saying, oh, you're a nice boy. He went, pow! He spit right on his face. That's my father. He was so aghast and horrified. He just said, he looked at me and said, what kind of son do you have here? And you know, and then he said, well, I didn't like the way he smelled like a cigar. He's always smoking these big fat cigars from Havana cigars from Cuba. I just stunk. I just spit on him. The kids are a little unpredictable. You know, there's no Amy Vanderbilt rules of etiquette for them. There's no yama niyama and asana and pranayama and controlling your mind. They do it, whatever. They if it feels good, do it. If it feels bad, reject it. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as the arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, oh, Krishna certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't know. Karma and time have no effect on a devotee. Karma, vikarma, the reactions, the punya karma, papa karma, the good reactions, bad reactions, and the kala chakra, which is spinning and moving and driving and forcing everyone to go forward to the jaws of death. Karma and kala chakra. Karma chakra and kala chakra. 2 chakras. Karma chakra whirling over our right shoulder and this kala chakra whirling over our left shoulder. Driving us, forcing us, kicking us, pushing us on. To where? Death. Annihilation. But they don't have any effect on a devotee. So this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress. Considering how to engage me in his service. Bhagavad Puran confirms this in 4.20.31. Yata charit bala hitam pita swayam tata tvam evarhasi na samihitum. Samihitum. Quote, as a father not waiting for the son's demand does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think best for me, my dear Lord Krishna, Vishwanath. That person who passes his life offering respects, namaste, ridvag vapurbir viridhan namaste. He passes his life offering his namaste, his respects. He offers respects with his body. He offers respects with his mind. He offers respects to his words. To whom? To the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. As Prita Maharaj did. While suffering, while tolerating the suffering of austerities or other hardships, such a surrendered and respectful devotee becomes the recipient, Dayabak, of two results. A tolerant, submissive, and respectful devotee receives two results from the Lord. Dayabak means he gets some treasure. He receives some gift, some wealth, wealth tax. He receives some inheritance. One, he attains liberation from material bondage, because this is mukti pad. He is given mukti, liberation from samsara, chakra, and kala chakra, no more time factor, no more birth and death, disease and old age. Freedom from material bondage, rotating a cycle of birth and death. No more material bodies, no more happiness and distress at the hands of Maya. And the second result, the second inheritance, Dayabhak, that he receives is service to the lotus feet of Mukunda. Mukunda pada sevanam, Mukunda pada sevanam. Etam sarastaya paratmanastam adyasitam puravat mahara maharshavi hamdurisyami dunantapama panam tamo mukunda sevya. This is verse in 11th canto of the Lord Chaitanya, recited as a sannyasi. Mukunda seva. So he gets mukunda seva. So he gets freedom. He gets freedom from all these bad things, and he gets all the bad things are taken away from him. Birth and death is not good. Old age and disease are not good or desirable. Krishna takes away all the undesirables and he gives you the most desirable, fulfilling and satisfying experience, the service of the lotus feet of Mukunda. That's, for example, you may have inherit some money from your father, and that money does two things. You've been in debt for 5 years, then your father dies and leaves you $10 million, but you have $3 million debt. So first thing, you pay the $3 million debt with that inheritance. But there's more. For the other $7 million, you retire and spend your whole life chanting Hare Krishna. So you got removed, your suffering and difficulties were removed, and your undesirables are taken away, and you were given the most desirable form of life. Peace, retirement, happiness. As the inheritance from the father maintains the life of the son, so the attainment of liberation and service to the Lord maintains the life of the devotee. Thus, while living in this world, the devotee remains fixed on the path of devotion. The Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.17 says, Dhritaya eva shvasant yasu brito yadite nuvidha. Quote, only if they become your faithful followers are those who breathe actually alive. Otherwise, their breathing is like that of the bellows used in the blacksmith shop to enrage or stimulate the fire, the coal, the fiery coals that he's trying to ignite and create some fire to pound the metal and make horseshoes and make other knives and metal implements shape in that hot fires of the blacksmith's kiln. So they're breathing, it's just push, 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 push. Just useless breath, useless rechaka and kumbhaka and purvaka. Purvaka, rechaka and kumbhaka. They're simply inhaling, holding and exhaling hot air and going nowhere. This is the material life. Inhaling and exhaling hot air, speaking a lot of hot air and bombastic words and phrases and philosophies, touting various hot air philosophies and ideologies, and dying like an animal and taking rebirth like another animal, an endless cycle of karma. The body, one's life becomes successful by serving Krishna with devotion. Otherwise the body, this physical body, man, woman, etc., it's just like a bellows of a blacksmith shop, simply inhaling and exhaling air. Prabhupada's commentary on this verse. There is no need of adopting the speculative method or exercising the body to attain mystic yoga perfection. One should simply understand that the distress and happiness, he's saying that yoga and jnana, it's not going to get you anywhere. One should simply understand that the distress and happiness of this body are predestined. There is no need to try to avoid the distress of this material existence or to attempt to achieve happiness by different types of exercise. Oftentimes I've heard some of the great acharyas, they say that the attempt of using the mind of the jnanis to understand the absolute truth is mental masturbation. That's quite a, in one sense, a gross analogy, but it's like that. They beat their mind and beat their mind and still no result. The mind is there and they haven't realized anything. So it's a type of mental exercise, different types of mental exercise, or the rigorous physical endeavors of controlling the bodily limbs and lungs and life air of asana and pranayama, of mystic yogis. As Prabhupada said, this is a useless, futile attempt. The best course is to surrender. Ridvāgva pabir, viradana namaste. Namaste means surrender. Nama. Na means no, and ma means ego. And we say namo Vishnu padaya means, first Vishnu, let me kill my ego. Maha means ego. False identity, and na means to destroy. So all prayers, they always have this word, namo Vishnu padaya. That's usually, they end with namaha. Namo, namo, tell Sri Krishna, namo Vishnu padaya. Vanshaka, what do you say, Krishna, the Vaishnavayam, Vaishnavayo, namo, namaha. Isn't it? So they either end with namaha or begin with namaha, or both. Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya. There's so many prayers. Because either in the beginning or end, false ego are an impediment. So Nama means no, not me. Nama. Ma means me. Mom. Not me. Not this false me. Not this false identity. This is not me. So first, Vishnu, I want Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Vrstaya. Oh Krishna Preshta. Oh Mukunda Preshta Gurudev. Srila Prabhupada. I want to approach your lotus. I want to approach you and attain the Vishnupada, because you're fixed at Vishnupada. But I won't actually understand or enter into your heart unless I'm free from false identity and can be utilized as a proper surrendered and submissive servant, Krishna Das, Guru Das. So first let me lay my false ego at the feet of you or Vishnupada, and then I can get the mercy of Preshta, because you're a dear, most beloved servant of the Lord. Namo Vishnupadaya. Krishna prastaya bhutale srimate bhaktivedanta swaminiti namane. Namane is the same thing, namane.
The best course is to surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead with body, mind, and words.
Rid vag vapurbir vidadan namaste. So Prabhupada is giving a purported, mixed purport and translation, and blended in a very wonderful way.
The best course is to surrender with our body, mind, and words, and always be engaged in a service. This transcendental labor is fruitful. In other words, the labor, it's transcendental labor also to endeavor on the mystic yogic path to realize Paramatma. And it's also transcendental labor to study the Vedas and the Vedic aphorisms, Vedanta Sutra, Tattvamasi, Sarvam Kalvedam Brahma, Aham Brahmasmi, etc. But it's fruitless. You end up taking another birth or pausing temporarily and suspended animation of impersonal Brahman, or dabbling and dabbling in the delights of mystic power or revelation of the Paramatma. Of course, if there's personal based, if there's some personal base, you can stay localized realization forever. This transcendental labor, however, of bhakti is fruitful, but other attempts to understand the absolute truth are never successful. Therefore, an intelligent man does not try to understand the Supreme Person, the Absolute Truth, by speculative gyan marg or mystic power, yoga marg. Rather, the intelligent person, intelligent man or lady, engages in devotional service and depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's Sharanagati. Depending means surrendering. Krishna is my maintainer. If I simply serve Krishna, if I simply surrender to Krishna and serve Him, and chant His holy name and render some humble service, then He'll yoga kshemam vaham vyaham ananyas chintyanto mam yejana pariparshate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yoga kshemam vaham vyaham. He'll personally vaham, I will personally carry. You need food, you need shelter, you need protection, you need satisfaction, you need peace, you need encouragement, you need hope. You need happiness. I carry all these things on my back and deliver it to you. And you're having some difficulty, you're having some problems, you're calling out to me, Hey Bhagavan, please help me. Govinda Damo Dharamadaveti. Govinda Damo Dharamadaveti. You're calling, oh Govinda Madhav, Damodara, please help me. This Maya is attacking me. I can't go on. I'm about to perish. I'm about to drown in this ocean of forgetfulness and illusion. So then I carry what you lack and I preserve what you have. I come and take away your difficulties and keep all your good things intact. You don't lose your position in bhakti. You don't lose your attachment to your guru. You don't lose your boat doesn't go down. I preserve what you have. I preserve the integrity of your devotion. I preserve the accomplishments you have. They're not lost. And I carry and bring you more things. This is my promise in Gita. Yoga kshemam vaham. I carry in my own hands. See, look, everything that's in my hand, I'm carrying, give it to you, hand to hand, straight. Not indirectly, through my energies, through some postman, through a courier mail, through UPS, Fed Express. I don't just post it and send it and make it lost. I come, hello, you're Krishnadas? Oh, hi, Bhagavan. Yes, I'm your Lord. I'm your Pranath. I've come to your door. I've come to your door of your heart, door of your mind. You're wanting these things here. Take from my hands into your hands. Direct, saksha. Put your two hands out. From my two hands, receive what you require. I carry it in my hands tenderly and carefully. So if I give it to someone else, they may drop it. If I give it to someone else, they may keep it. I give it to someone else, they may sell it. Or may get stolen from their hands. But if I deliver it personally, no one will take it. It won't get lost. You'll be sure to receive the gifts I want to give you. Yoga kshema maham yaham. There, the Supreme Person, rather the devotee engages in devotional service and depends on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee knows that whatever may happen to the body is due to his past fruitive activities. If one lives such a simple life in devotional service,
then automatically he can inherit the transcendental abode of the Lord. Actually, this is nice, Prabhupada says, because this jivetiyo mukti pade sadayavak, mukti pad means the place where my feet are, the place where the Mukunda's feet are. So that means the abode of the Lord. We inherit the spiritual world. It's a pretty big inheritance. Somebody says, you know, so-and-so's father was like this and that. He got $3 million inheritance. So what? My father's not a big industrialist. He didn't have a lot of money. He didn't leave me anything. But you know what? But the father, the Aham Bija Pradapita, the father of everyone, God the Father, my so-called birth father, he was a beggar. He was a drunkard. He didn't leave anything. So I'm not a very wealthy devotee. I have simple clothes, no fancy car. I don't even have a car. I have to take the city bus across town. And I'm not doing so great. And people look at me, oh, you're small timers. You don't have any fleshy anything. I just go along my Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I just go along my small, little, humble, insignificant, unseen, unknown way. And Krishna says, hey you. Did you get, you saw I made my will out. Yeah. Oh, what's the signature? It says, Bhagavan. It's very fancy. It's hard to read. It's huge. Bhagavan Sri Krishna. See, this is the signature on the bottom of the will. Acha. Yes, you read the will. Oh, you're taking me to the kingdom of God. You're the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. You're me? Little me? You're going to take me back? That's right. What about this big devotee? He's a big devotee. He has so much money, a big fancy car, and has so many titles and names and influence, and he's every day he's on the internet and everyone's jumping up and down, jai, 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 jai. And no one knows who I am. I'm a little pipsqueak. I've been in the movement for 79 years, serving Prabhupada. I just wash the temple dishes and take out the trash, and I never won a Sankirtan award. In fact, when I go on Sankirtan, I'm scared. I'm afraid of those karmis. I might fall into Maya. I just like to stay at a temple and read Krishna book and clean up after the devotees, and I'm happy. Yes, I know everything. And now you're coming back to Godhead. You're going to inherit my boat. Wow, thanks. Here we go. So if one lives such a simple life in devotional service, then automatically it can inherit the transcendental boat of the Lord. Actually, every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and a son of the Godhead. Each humble, simple devotee, he has a natural right. It is natural and right to inherit and share the transcendental pleasures of the Lord. Very beautiful phrase. This is a verse. Jivete yo mukti pade sadaya bhak. Now that's quite a bhakti tika on this Sanskrit. Jivete. Jivete means someone who's jiva, jivatma, a living person, a human being, anyone, animal. Jivete. Jiveta, jivata. Ta means the tendency or the characteristic to be jiva, to be alive. Jivete. Jiveta yo mukti pade sadhaya vak. Daya vak means you inherit, you receive. It's your gift. The word means inheritance. Daya vak. So he says, he takes inheritance and mukti pad to mean that the natural right to inherit and share the transcendental pleasures of the Lord. Because that phrase, it's not mukti pad. How does it mean transcendental pleasures of the Lord? But to someone who's realized. That's why it says we should... there's five limbs, the Panchanga Bhakti in Nectar Devotion. If one performs any one of these five limbs of devotion, then Krishna Prem Odaya. Krishna Prem will awaken in the heart simply by hearing the Bhagavatam or Nam Sankirtan or serving Vaishnava with Sarasanga. Or living in a holy dham, or worshipping the deities with faith. So Bhagavad Shravan, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Bindu by Vishnu Chakravarti, he explains this term, Bhagavad Shravan Rasik Bhakta Sahasanga. One should hear the Bhagavatam, the sacred teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Sahasanga, with or in the association of Rasik Vaishnavas. So sitting in Russia or America or other places, maybe not so much possible to get the daily or intimate association of a Rasik Vaishnava. Yes or no? The answer is no. Because we can read Sartha Darshini, the commentaries of Vishnu Chakravarti, in English, if we only know English, or maybe it's in Russian, can't say. Or we can certainly read Prabhupada's books, which are unquestionably in 70 languages or so around the world, including Swahili Bhagavatam. What that language is, I don't even know. I think it's something from Africa. Swahili. Nice words, Swahili. Chinese, Vietnamese Bhagavatam, Portuguese, Vietnamese, whatever easy language you have. Baltic languages, Russian languages, unbelievable. The major languages, that's already understood. Spanish, French, German, Italian, Hindi, Bengali, Telugu, Tamil, Manipuri, everything. It's unbelievable. And sitting down with that book in your native language or your own country language, you can have anywhere on the planet at any time of the day. You can have Rasika Bhakta Saha Sangha. Param Rasika Vaishnava Sri Nityananda Purushottam Sri Srimade Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Rasika Vaishnava, I would like to say, with all conviction and respect to others, there may be so many of the same category, but from my subjective viewpoint, I would like to say that Prabhupada is Param Bhakta, Param Vaishnava, par excellence, Param Rasik Vaishnava. So how do we hear from him? He's in the Tilila. We can read his devotional tikas, which are full of his bhakti ras, they're full of ras. Rasika Babuvaka, says Srila Prabhupada. So we've heard something from his tika here. And you can see it, it's dripping with realization. Prabhupada's purports and tikas and Krishna book and rest of the Bhagavatam, they're dripping and saturated and soaked with realization. You just put your finger on it, your finger becomes soaking wet. Ras means liquid, ras means taste, ras means flavor, ras means ecstasy. All these experiences of rasa can be had when one hears from a rasic Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada ki. Listen to this beautiful sentence of Prabhupada in his purport as he closes his tika here. If one adopts the simple method of engaging himself in devotional service, automatically he becomes eligible to become freed from the material contamination and elevated to the transcendental position of associating with the Supreme Lord. Because Muktipad can also mean, any Sanskrit translator say, Muktipad means the place of the feet of Mukunda, or the place of the feet of the Lord who gives Mukti. It means you go to Vaikuntha, and you may be in Vaikuntha, but it doesn't mean you're having association with the Lord. You may attain Mukti to Vaikuntha, there's Sarupya Mukti, there's Silokya Mukti, there's Sharshti Mukti, there's Samipya Mukti. There's four types of Vaikuntha Mukti, personal liberation. But the only one of those gives you the opportunity of associating with the Supreme Lord. And that's Samipya. That's what it means. Silokya means you made it. Hey, I'm here. I'm in India. Acha. Yes, I'm living in India, Indian citizenship. Are you regularly seeing every day the Prime Minister? Huh? I don't even know where he lives. I don't even know what his name is. So you may attain Silokya Mukti, you're in Vaikuntha, but where are you and where is Vishnu? Or you may have Sharshti, because you're a pure devotee, but you want a big palace and lots of maidservants. So you have that. You're like a little Vishnu. What do the Vaikuntha Vasis look like? Exactly like Vishnu. Four arms, blue. The only difference is some hairs on the chest and a golden line.
So that means that's the only difference. It means you have a big palace, and you have a big gold chariot, and you have all these facilities. But are you regularly talking, laughing, associating, whatever, with the Lord? No. Otherwise, why do we say Samipya Mukti? Yeah, Sarupa, you have the same form, and obviously the same form. You have two muktis in one. You have Salokya, you have Sarupya, and you have Sharsti, which means the wealth and opulence. You may have that. You may have just Salokya. You have Salokya, but it's like Shantaras. You're a tree over there in Vaikuntha, Paridraj tree or whatever. So you're there. You're on the planet, but you're like not doing much. But Samipya is something special. So he's saying, Jivaita, Yo Mukti Pade Sadayabhak, that the Vaishnava, the devotee who spends his whole life hearing and chanting and associating with the Lord. Krishna's name is Sakshat Krishna. Krishna's leelas and pastimes are Sakshat Krishna, Sakshat Krishna Sangha, direct association. We're associating with Krishna every day in his Murti form. Murti, Archamurti, is directly Krishna. It's not, where is he? I don't see it. We're dressing, we're touching, we're associating with him. So then when we leave this body, if we inherit, we get Sarupya, we go to Goloka Vrindavan, Boma Vrindavan, but we attain a transcendental position. So he said, okay, you're free from material contamination. Kala Chakra, Samsara Chakra, we're free, we're liberated. Now we're flying in a Paravyom, in the spiritual sky, up, up, up and away. And we finally land somewhere and spend our day with the Supreme Lord of mirth and play. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. So it says, okay, I'm liberated, I'm free from Haridasya. Karmana Manasagira, Iha Yasya Harer Dasya, Karmana Manasagira. So now, Jivan Mukta Siuchade. So I'm liberated. I've attained the spiritual sky. It says, elevated to the transcendental position. But then the sentence goes on. Well, okay, I'm elevated to the transcendental position. What does that mean? Well, there's four elevations. You can go to the fourth floor elevation, you go to the fifth floor, seventh. Elevator takes you to the fifth floor, sixth floor, seventh floor, eighth floor, whatever, isn't it? Elevation, rising up. So, all right, I'm liberated from birth and death. I'm liberated from the causal plane, Bhurbhuvaswa. I've attained, across the Karna Samudra, Viraja River, Karna Samudra. I've crossed it. I'm in the spiritual sky. I've landed on Vaikuntha. Well, if I land on Vaikuntha, have I attained the transcendental position? Yes. Salokya Mukti. But Prabhupada goes on. You've attained the transcendental position, what? Of the wealth, Sharsti, of the planet, Salokya. Of the form, Sarupya? No. Of associating with the Supreme Lord. Samipya. That's the intimacy. That's the confidential arrangement. You're right there. The Lord moves. You're there. He sits. He talks. Everything. You're with Him. This is something special. Srila Prabhupada's Krishna Bhakti Ki Jai. So tomorrow, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, Giridhari, and Radharani, and Gauranga Mahaprabhu, in this holy month of Purushottam Adhik Mas, on the banks of Shamakund, Radhakund, we hope to speak something on verse number 9. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Vyasadeva ki jai.